everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter, and we're going to do some progressive sex talk, especially progressive because I have Dr. Lori Buckley with me again. Welcome to the program, Dr. Lori.
Thank you, Dr. Diana. Always happy to be here.
And the thank you. And your book is quite wonderful, 21 Decisions for Great Sex and a Happy Relationship. Can be purchased on Amazon. And for this program, Dr. Lori and I are going to discuss our favorite sex tips and more. And Dr. Lori and I co-narrated Great Sex for a Lifetime, Volumes 1 and 2, available on bettersex.com. Great Sex for a Lifetime. That was about, do you know that that was about 10 years ago now? But
oh, man, I'm telling you, how time flies. But I'll tell you, if listeners want to get some sex tips, this is the place to be. You and I, we've got some good stuff, and us together, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to talking about it, hearing the things that you have to say, because we've got some experience behind us.
We do. We do. And I have 30-plus years, and you must, well, you're younger, but you have still 20-plus years, maybe?
Well, I've been studying sex my whole life. But,
well, yes.
But working as a sex therapist, it's somewhere between 15 and 20.
Right.
Yeah, so
right.
A little less than 20, yeah.
Okay. So, but Dr. Lori regularly conducts seminars and workshops for women, men, and couples, teaching ways to improve communication, increase sexual pleasure and satisfaction. We have a real expert with us today, and it should be fun for us to talk about some of our favorite sex tips.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And also, you know, I think that one of the best sex tips is being mindful of how you are in your relationship and how you show up, because if you're showing up in your relationship, you know, you're going to have better sex.
Absolutely, and that requires getting out of your head and into your body.
That's the number one tip, isn't it? One of them, anyways.
Yeah, because you and I both work with intelligent people who often are a little stuck in their heads. I've got lots of Microsoft and Amazon folks, you know, engineers here in Seattle, and well, you're in Pasadena, Caltech. It's similar. It's hard for some of these JPL people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To get out of
it. But even the creative types can get in their head, and I get a lot of those too. So it's just the thing that we do automatically. I think to learn to get into our body and out of our head does require exactly that. It's a skill. It isn't something that we do instinctively, at least most of us. So it's one of those skills that we don't even know we need when we think about having sex. We think it's just supposed to happen, right? Good sex just happens, but we know differently. We need to be much more intentional, and there are definite skills and tools and tips, and that's what we're going to be talking about that help people.
Absolutely. And you have, in this book of yours, you've got some really good 21 Decisions for Great Sex and a Happy Relationship. So you have lots of good suggestions. So exercise, 3 fun suggestions. I especially like role-playing. Take a date night to a whole new level by making it a night of play. I love that. And I've suggested this to clients, too. No, go ahead.
Yes. No, it's true. I think a lot of couples try to adopt this date night thing. And when people think of date night, oftentimes they think, okay, they're going to go out to dinner, they're going on a date. But when I say date night, I like to think of it in a much bigger way. First of all, it doesn't have to be night. So another word is play date. It could be during the morning, it could be during the afternoon, and it doesn't necessarily need to be dinner or a meal. Try something new. Try something exciting. Make it playful. And those kinds of things can really make a difference in a relationship.
It really can, because if you're trying something new, you get dopamine flowing, and dopamine is the hormone of arousal, and dopamine needs novelty. So certainly playing out fantasies can bring some novelty. And I like your play date rather than it being a date night. I add to this, for some of my clients, taking turns, at least twice a month, have a play date. Taking turns planning it and adding an element of surprise is always good for sex, isn't it? Again, you get more dopamine. So taking turns planning it, and then I like to say whoever has planned the play date gets to initiate sex.
And that can get in the way sometimes. Who's going to initiate? I want to initiate because I want to be rejected, or I want you to initiate. So I like that. It just makes it smoother, and you know what's going to happen. And being, you know, one of the things you're talking about, which I love, and I think you do it too, but I like the word and this understanding of rituals. So this idea of going on a play date twice a month, you know, like we'll say the first and the third Saturday of every month, that's a ritual. It's something that you can count on. And in that ritual, the one that you just described, which I love, you're also adding in what you can count on is an element of surprise. So you're getting the best of everything. Time together, rituals, a surprise and excitement. It's like a perfect thing. It seems like so simple, and yet can make a huge difference in connection and eroticism for a couple.
It sure can. And I remember something you told me, probably more than 10 years ago, and it was when we were having a visit, an in-person visit, and you said you ask your couples often in the first session, well, when was the last time you had any fun? And,
right.
You know, and I
so important.
Adopted that because so many couples have forgotten to have some fun. And
yeah, you stop having fun, you know, you're dead in the water. You need to create fun. It's not something that necessarily automatically happens, especially when life gets in the way. There's so many responsibilities. We're tired. We're working hard. There's kids. There's bills. And you need to create that time because otherwise it just won't happen most of the time. I mean, there's some lucky people who it just happens spontaneously. But creating fun is an important part of it, too. Speaking of fun, one of the tips or one of the things I've been recommending to my clients lately, I don't know if you know about this, it's a book, and it's called 469 Fun Sex Questions for Couples, and it's by Michael and Barbara Kordakos, and I don't know if it's with a K, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but, you know, I really like this little book. I've been really recommending it, and that's exactly what it is, Fun Sex Questions for Couples, and they talk about everything, you know, it goes really across the spectrum of kinky or talking about romance and kisses, and I think it's a great resource for couples to go to you know, create some conversations that they may not have otherwise. Maybe learn some things. It takes a little bit of courage sometimes to have those conversations. And having a resource like this, Table Topics is another good one. Not as much about sex as it is about life and getting interested. And some of it, you know, that can sort of be about romance. But Table Topics for couples or for dating is another great resource to give people a source to ask questions that they may not have thought about and to just get more understanding for themselves and each other.
Very, very good. And how, maybe you can, before I write up this show, maybe you can send me the actual spelling of the Kordakos. you have in your book, Recommended Readings. I love Michael Castleman's Great Sex. It focuses on males, and it's really good, second only to Bernie Zubergeld, The New Male Sexuality, back in 1999. And then probably the best, and you put this in your book too, The Guide to Getting It On by Paul Yohannides.
Yes, one of my favorites. And have you seen, he has I forget what he calls it, he gave it such a cute title, but it's just a more condensed version of The Guide to Getting It On. And he just released that within the last year. And it's such a great book. It's such a great resource. It's my favorite, The Guide to Getting It On by Paul Yohannides, Yohannides with a J. I highly recommend that book. And again, he has that new version, and I can't think of what it's called, but it's a little smaller because the other one, oh, I forget the amount of pages. I'm thinking 1,400. Anyways, it's a very large book.
Yes.
So if you want something a little more specific and condensed, he has that new version out, which is fabulous.
Well, I didn't know he had a new version. He's been on this program, but not for a while. Maybe I can reapproach him.
Yes.
Because I think, that's the best. I think he has the best sex ed book out there.
It's fun to read, and it's so informative, and it is a great resource for people to be able to have some conversations. And really, that's what it's about. It's not so much about the book or the video. It's about the conversations that you have with your partner.
Yes. And speaking of that, in your book, Exercise 4, How to Communicate Effectively, you've got such good suggestions here. Self-disclose, give choices, use here or there, this or that, et cetera. Make requests, be positive, take timeouts, listen. Oh, think how many of people don't really listen. And take turns completing the following sentences. And this is really good. It turns me on when you... It turns me off when you. My favorite place to be touched during sex is. My least favorite place to be touched during sex is. My favorite sexual position is. I've always wanted to try. Well, that kind of covers everything. And that could generate lots of really good sex talk, good sexual communication.
Yes, such simple questions, but not necessarily easy to ask. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about sexual communication, you know, you and I talking about sex, it's what we do every day. So sometimes it's hard to appreciate how difficult and challenging that is for some people. I know that, but it really is. It's one of those things that a lot of people have difficulty doing. And I get my couples to talk about sex when they're not having sex. We start that in the office, and those questions and these kinds of resources we're talking about gives them other tools and resources to be able to do that. And then what you were talking about, the, you know, do you want to be touched here or there or this way or that way? Those are ways to talk about sex while you're having sex, which, of course, is extremely important. So important.
Absolutely. And so you also have, and I think this is a favorite exercise that sex therapists give, and it's the sensual touch exercise. You outline that in your book. I call it alternately sensate focus homework or touch homework or caressing exercise.
Yes, homework. You can call it many things. I now call it mindful touch.
Mindful touch,
really is
good. I like that.
Yeah. Because it really is a mindfulness practice, and so I've been calling it mindful touch. I used to call it, I don't know. I've gone through, I think I called it sensual touch and then pleasurable touch, and now it's mindful touch. And who knows? By the way, I did look up as we were speaking, the new Paul Yohannides book, and it's called Getting It On, Guide to Getting It On, Unzipped.
Unzipped. Okay.
Unzipped.
Good.
So
you can multitask, Lori. Very nice.
Well, yeah, maybe not as well as I would like. But yeah, the whole mindful touch, which is absolutely based on Masters and Johnson's Sensate Focus. It's what you talked about at the beginning of the show, which is so essential to having really good, sustainably good sex, which is being out of your head and in your body, in the experience of the situation, of the sexual encounter, as opposed to doing and achieving and trying and performing, which, you know, we hear those words all the time, right? I can't perform, or I can't achieve, achieving an orgasm is actually, no, that's not good. I can't achieve an orgasm. We want to be able to experience pleasure and experience orgasms, but if we are trying to achieve an orgasm or get an erection or not come, all of the things, they put us in our head and they actually stop the things from happening that we want, which is pleasure and arousal, which ultimately can be an orgasm. But even without an orgasm, sex can be pretty darn good.
Absolutely. And what you're talking about is, lots of people are just so goal-oriented, and a lot of times these people are very intelligent, but they're goal-oriented, and so it's difficult for them to truly appreciate the journey because they're just focused on the destination. And so so many women who struggle with orgasm are in that category. They're just having trouble. Yeah.
And their partner is trying so hard to give them an orgasm, and they're feeling pressured to have an orgasm, and they're trying, everybody's trying so hard.
Yeah.
And in the trying, you're not experiencing, and it's really more work than fun.
Yes,
and that's why sex starts becoming less. Yeah, sex starts becoming less frequent when it's not so much fun, especially if that trying is getting in the way of the pleasure and having the orgasms. Then everybody just starts feeling bad, and before you know it, sex is really pretty infrequent.
Infrequent, yes. So there's also, I think a lot of men buy into this, that it's their responsibility to make the female partner have an orgasm or to give her an orgasm. And you and I both know that it is really the woman's responsibility to be present, to let go, to surrender, to do her Kegel contractions, whatever she needs. But she needs to get it going. And it isn't the man's idea. I heard one man say, oh, I have to practically push her against the wall and to make her have an orgasm. I said, no. And furthermore, her amygdala, the fear center of her brain, needs to take a nap. She needs to feel safe. She needs to feel secure. Otherwise, the orgasm isn't going to happen. So,
right, and not just in bed. They need to feel safe before you even get into bed.
Yes. Yeah. Expand on that a little bit, Dr. Laurie.
So it's what I was saying before, is if we want to, especially, I think that, and I don't mean to overly generalize, but I am going to generalize, and there are always exceptions, but generally speaking, women really do need to feel safe. And like you were saying, if we need to be able to let go, to surrender, to open up. And to do that, we need to feel emotionally safe, not just physically safe. So it's a really important thing when we are feeling, women are feeling loved and safe and connected, it is much easier, and I'm not saying that's all we need. We need some eroticism in there too, but it's much easier to open up and surrender and let go when we feel that he's trying to get us an orgasm, and we, if we don't, he's going to get upset, whatever the thoughts are in our head or the beliefs are that are getting in the way of us feeling safe, not just physically. Most of the time we feel physically safe, but emotionally safe is really important as well.
It sure is. And if the woman feels emotionally safe and connected to her partner, she's much more likely to to feel desire. And I think one of the tips that I give to men more than to women is, and it's tied in with what we're talking about, to compliment her and keep doing it. I say at least 5 times a day. It'll make her feel noticed and special and appreciated. And so she'll feel closer to the man. And because the more connected she feels, the more sexually inspired she'll feel. And haven't you found that too?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it is true. And I always add, and it has to be sincere, because she'll see right through it if it isn't.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, I mean, that's sort of a... It's sort of a given, but just to make sure that it's because oftentimes we're all, and look, men need to feel appreciated and needed. You know, if we're going to go into kind of some polarization, some male and female dynamics, I do think that there's that male need to feel appreciated and needed, and the woman to feel loved and safe. And we all have these needs, and sometimes they might be different. So we can say men and women, but you know, we all have male and female energy in us. We all have it. But for a relationship to be erotic, we do need that polarization, right? We need to have the male and the female, the yin and the yang. And it doesn't matter. It could, you know, could be a same-sex couple, and it could be a male and female where the female has the male energy and the male has the female energy. But there do need to be, or there does need to be, some male and female energy for that, you know, that hot, erotic sex to take place. And I think what we're saying is, and we got off topic, but you were saying about the woman feeling, a woman needing to take ownership of her own sexual pleasure. That is true. And sometimes that means also to communicate what she needs or what she wants, but also for us to show up, not just 2 minutes before we want to have sex or when we're having sex, but all the time, every day, to wake up every day and have intentions. If you're in a committed relationship, and that's really what we're talking about here. We're not talking about just hooking up, because let's face it, most people who are just hooking up don't really need our help. We're talking
about people.
It is true, right? We're talking about people who are in a committed, monogamous relationship, and maybe they're having some struggles, or it started out really good, and they lost their way, or maybe it's never been good. And that's really who we're talking to. But when you wake up every morning and you think, what can I do to show my partner I love them? What can I do today to connect? Those daily intentions are the things that stop once we are with someone for a while or once we get married. They're there usually at the beginning. But when we can continue them, and they do take more intention and effort as we've been with someone for a while, that does impact our sex life, as well as, I'm going to say, our well-being and personal happiness.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the word polarity, and in the tantric yoga tradition, we've got the chakras, right? Sex is the life energy that flows through the body, and its energy centers, the chakras, the head, the heart, the head, pelvis, and so on. And you and your partner can learn to channel this energy and ride it to the maximum pleasure. But it depends on polarity. And you just described same-sex couples can have this too. But sexual energy springs from opposing charges. You know, the masculine, feminine, the yin, the yang, the greater the polarity, the more intense the sexual charge. And we let the polarity drain out and then wonder why we've not had sex for 2 months. I mean, some people do that and they just, well, what happened here? So, so I think there is a room for the some tantra coming into play here. Where when I'm working with clients, sometimes we'll talk about how the Shiva, the Shakti, it's designed to heighten polarity and restore the goddess to her glory, so to speak. And yeah. So, but in homework that I give to these, if we're in this realm, it's the man's job to give pleasure and the woman's to let go and let the goddess out.
And to allow herself to receive. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because men always ask themselves, how am I doing? And women ask, how do I look? And, you know, and that well, right, that keeps them in their heads, right? Not in their bodies.
We're all needy, insecure beings. And, you know, I think to accept that and acknowledge it rather than trying to fight it is really empowering. And it's okay. And it doesn't mean that we can't be in a place of strength. I think we go to a place of strength and we accept that, yeah, you know, we're all moving along and struggling along and doing the best we can and ideally growing along the way. And when we do that, we are in a place of strength. When we're trying to fight it, to not be vulnerable, to show up in a way that is inauthentic, then it doesn't work out so well. It's coming more from a place of fear. And living in fear doesn't do anybody any good in any part of our life, and certainly not in a relationship or in a sexual experience.
And you and I have both had to work with people who've had sexual trauma in their past, and they need to, you know, to get to maybe eliminate the fear or at least manage it. So that they can move on is important to understand the sexual trauma, the sexual abuse. And it's very hard for people to do this on their own. If we have listeners who've had sexual trauma in their past, find a good person, a good therapist. They can go to AASECT, American Association for Sex Counselors and Therapists. Did I miss something here?
Counselors and therapists.
Yes, thank you. And if they do the ASEC.com, they can find a certified sex therapist in their area. Because people who've had sexual abuse trauma in their past really need to work with somebody who's accustomed to working in this area and can help them move beyond.
Yes, I agree.
Boundaries, when they're sexually abused, they don't have a good sense of where they leave off and the other begins, and then they also, it gives them a lot of trouble to surrender, to be in the moment, because they've got memories.
It's very confusing, and one of the things that I do, if there's some severe trauma, and by the way, sexual abuse or molestation or, you know, power things that happened, maybe it was with a parent or with an older person, you were a child, that's not sex. That is a violent act. And it's confusing because there's sex involved, but I try to really help them understand the difference between the two. That is not coming from a place of love, although it may have felt like love, and that's why it can be so traumatic and confusing if you were a child. But one of the things that mindfulness is a great practice when you are working through that and finding that safety that we talk about. But for people who have had severe trauma, another resource that I have or that I work with people is to, in addition for the couple to see me and to work through the relationship and the sexual, it will say enhancement to find something really great there, is also to work through the trauma with somebody who is certified in either EMDR or brain spotting. And I find that really effective for a lot of people to work through the real trauma piece. So it depends. Sometimes just doing the work, you know, in our office can be enough. But if they really are struggling with that, the trauma, the specific trauma piece with the EMDR and brain spotting, it can be really powerful. It's a nice combination.
So I know, of course, about EMDR, and I agree with you totally. I don't know about brain spotting. Tell me about brain spotting.
So it's brain spotting is a bit newer, but comes kind of from the same movement, and it's It's very interesting. It is also neurological, so both of them are similar in the fact that we're dealing with the brain.
Yes.
Brain spotting, without going into the details, because I can't, although I have a colleague who I work with who does it, and it's fascinating. I think, you know, we all respond to different things, but it's all similar in that you're working with the brain, and kind of just, in a way, we could say it's just exposing and extinguishing that trauma from your brain. Mm. So it's a neurological thing. But mindfulness is also neurological.
Yes,
it's just
it is.
A little bit slower and a little bit more methodical, but again, can be really, really useful when you're working with, or if a couple comes in and works with one of us. And I don't generally work, and you may, but I don't generally work with individuals with trauma and who are dealing with sexual trauma in the past on an individual basis. So what I do in my practice, just because I don't feel that I am equipped to do that, but when it comes to working with a couple in that area to create something wonderful and pleasurable and safe and positive in their sex life, I work with them, and then I refer the individual, if needed, to a trauma specialist. But I don't do that myself. So you may have more experience in that area than I do.
A little bit, but I agree with you. So let's, since we promised the listeners, so that's very good advice, Lori. Let's talk a little bit about some other tips.
Okay.
And I give my clients this quiz. It's not really a quiz. It's a way for them to evaluate what meanings they ascribe to sex. So they have opposites, and they mark it on a continuum between work, play. These are opposites. Tense, relaxed. I'm just giving you a few of them, and there are many.
Yeah.
Tame, wild. And they mark on the continuum, and then where there are discrepancies, we talk about that. But first, I get them to talk about it at home. Exhausting, energizing, typical, unusual. And then one of the things I like about this meanings is that the most important reasons, purposes for sex. And so number one would be the most important, number two the least. So then they get to mark these, and it gets people thinking about what am I thinking about sex and what are the meanings for me? So here are some of the things that they can mark. Accomplishments, okay. Affection, bargaining exchange, communication, concern for partner, this would be altruism, duty, obligation, procreation, recreation/play, spiritual bond, and tension release. That summarizes a lot of reasons, purposes,
yes.
that many people have.
Yeah.
You want me to send you
like
this?
That. Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to ask you. I think that's fabulous. I'll ask them the meaning, but that makes it so much clearer and easier. Yeah, that's a good one.
And then the homework is they're supposed to discuss this between themselves before they come in, and then they bring the results of their quiz. It's not really a quiz, but their assignment.
And then we talk about it. You can't fail it. It's a quiz that you can't fail.
Exactly.
Which is nice.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I think that's a great tool. It's a great tool, because isn't that so important? And like you said, you get to really explore the discrepancies and mm-hmm. understand them, because discrepancies, they're not really a problem as long as they're understood and they're talked about.
Exactly.
You know
right.
what I mean?
Yes.
It's like when people, a lot of people say, oh, yeah, we have desire discrepancy, or, my partner, they want sex all the time. I don't want sex. So we have, we're incompatible. And that's what they believe. And the difference in sexual desire isn't a problem by itself. It's the meaning that they give it and how they address it or don't.
Precisely.
That's really mostly problematic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because everybody has different desires, different wants, different needs. You know, and on that note, one of the things that I teach my clients or help them with is really understanding the needs versus the wants when it comes to sex. So there's things that create a really great sexual experience for us, and mm-hmm. there are things that, you know, that we actually don't need. They would be nice, and then there are things that we absolutely have to have. And a lot of times when I ask people what their conditions are for good sex or what they need, sometimes I'll have this really long list, right? Well, the kids need to be asleep. I need to be well rested. I need to feel connected. I need to have had a glass of wine or not have had a glass of wine. The sheets need to be clean. We both need to be showered. I mean, they have this long, long list. And then you're thinking, well, okay, I need to be in the mood, you know, that they're not having sex. Well, of course they're not, because that's just completely unrealistic. And so that is useful to understand that some of these are just wants. They're nice when they happen. But let's look at the things on that list that absolutely you need. And it's a very subjective thing. Some people cannot enjoy sex, cannot experience pleasure if they haven't taken a shower first, or if, you know, their partner and them haven't had at least some time together before they hop into bed. That may be a need. And again, there's no right or wrong. It's very, very subjective or idiosyncratic. But when we know what they are and we can plan for that, and I know something you and I have talked about, which is what we know works, but a lot of people are resistant to it, this whole scheduling and planning for sex can be really great, because you get to set it up where you know it's going to work, right? Rather
Absolutely.
Than waiting until you're both in the mood.
Yes, I call it planned spontaneity. You know, you can plan a night out on the town, for instance, and within that plan, you can have spontaneity. And
I love it. Yeah,
a lot of people. You've seen it, are resistant to it, and they think
that... The way you're wording it makes all the difference. So scheduling sex versus planned spontaneity, I'd sign me up for planned spontaneity. That sounds so much better. That sounds so much better. Okay, I want to talk about a couple of fun things. Let's get into, some more sexy stuff. And
I think that's a very good idea.
Yes, go ahead,
because I think it's a good time to shift.
All of my clients, it's good, right? Yeah, so a couple things. One is coconut oil. I am a huge believer in coconut oil, and every single client that I have talked about coconut oil to use as a lubricant. Obviously, if you're using a condom, you know, you can't do that. That's not going to work. But if you are, you know, in a, again, committed monogamous relationship, you're probably not using condoms anyway. So coconut oil is so much better than a over-the-counter store-bought lube, which, you know, for some people causes some problems. The water-based lube can get really dry and sticky after a while. And, you know, then if you use just oil or silicone lube, it can be a little bit much. But the coconut oil is sort of a dry oil, but it's nice and lovely. And if you don't like the smell of coconut, you can use the refined coconut oil, which does not have that coconut smell.
Refined. Okay, I didn't know that. Where do you find it?
Yeah. Trader Joe's, Whole Foods.
Okay, then I do know about it, refined. Yeah.
I think every grocery store has it now. Everybody's using it for so many things. It's great for your skin, and it's really good for you. So it's
natural.
That feels, it's natural. You want to get organic virgin, in my opinion. Why not?
Organic virgin.
Yeah, and it just feels really good. And it's a dryer oil. It's not going to mess up your sheets. It's just really nice. The only problem is if it's cold where you live, it can be hard, and all you have to do is stick it in a bowl of hot water or have one of those, you know, those warmers, those coffee mug warmers that you plug in that you keep your coffee mug on it. Have one of those. If you live in a cold climate, you can get them, you know, for a few bucks at Amazon. You just put that on your nightstand, turn it on, and put the coconut oil on there, and you're all set.
Oh, that's such a good idea, Lori. That's a great idea.
Thank you. Yep.
Yes, and I would like to say that we also need to encourage our clients to explore new regions. I mean, you know, most people know about female nipples and vagina and penis and all of that, but I think it's great to spend time at the back of the neck. It's a brave new world of nerve endings, so gentle caressing and kissing are all that's needed. Sometimes mm-hmm. the base of the spine is sensation central as well. Gently stroking and kissing a belly, particularly a female belly,
yes. mm-hmm.
just above the pubic hairline, and then sex. What I think about all of this is that sex then becomes about discovery, not seeking some destination. Because
yes,
goal-oriented sex
fun.
Is not that sexy.
I agree. And you're exploring, you're discovering, and you're teasing, and you're having some fun. And teasing is always a great thing. You know, we have all our different thoughts about the word foreplay, but ultimately delaying that gratification and working your way into it and spending time together and touching underneath the table or the teasing with the kisses on the neck and all other parts of the body rather than just going in for it is kissing is such a great thing too. All of that stuff is so
yeah.
important. And again, one of those things that tends to change over time. It's like the undressing. You remember the first time that you're with someone, usually undressing is pretty exciting. You know, you're peeling off your clothes. You get to see someone naked for the first time. It's so exciting. And then when you're with someone for a while, you know, either they're walking around naked all the time or you go to bed, you're both taking off your clothes. And it's just not nearly as fun or hot, really.
And so, haven't you found yeah. that you ask couples who've been together a long time, well, how much are you kissing? And they
yes.
often reply, not very much, really. And,
yeah, they like get this blank look on their face. As a matter of fact, in this coming week's podcast that I just recorded, that's exactly what I talked about was kissing and how important kissing is and how exciting it can be. But people have problems with kissing. Maybe they don't have the same kissing style, or maybe they don't know how to kiss well, or their partner doesn't know how to kiss well, or they just don't think of it. But yeah, kissing is so erotic and so intimate and so important, in my opinion. And I think you agree with me there.
Absolutely. And I give couples sometimes an assignment that when they greet each other at the end of the day, that they give each other a 7-second kiss and a 15-second hug. And that's long enough for some oxytocin to get going. And that helps them transition from work mode to R&R mode, rest and relaxation mode at home. It helps them transition.
Yeah.
They can go and do their own thing. But if they greeted each other that way with a 7-second kiss and a 15-second hug, then they can set the tone for the evening.
You know what? I love that because I'm much more strict. I
yeah.
have my couples do a minute long kiss. Like I want
yes.
it to be for a minute. And a lot of them, they look at me like I'm crazy. Like that's just not going to happen. So I like the option of the 7-second kiss with the 15-second hug. It's probably going to be more doable for people. But you know, I like the sometimes push them over their edge, but if it's too far over their edge, it's not going to work, right?
I've had some couples, you know, they're compliant and they really want to do their homework, and so they'll
yeah.
put the microwave on, time their seconds, and then they end up giggling. And if they have small children,
cute.
The small children or even larger children will, you know, be amazed and sometimes want to get in on the action, especially if they haven't seen mom and dad be affectionate with each other.
Yeah, I have some couples, they're like, well, but then my kids, they don't want to see that. I'm like, well, they may say gross, ew, yuck, they may say that, but it is a great thing to see their parents loving each other.
Well, it's the best sex
gift.
Education. Remember what probably you do remember this, what Dr. William Masters said. He said the best sex education a child can have is for him or her to see dad coming up behind mom, who might be cooking at the stove, putting his arms around her and even patting her butt. You know, I saw this with my parents when I was young. Mm, I even walked in on them when they were having a bubble bath together. I mean, this is probably one reason.
And look at how you turned out. So
yeah, look how I turned out.
Good. Yeah, it's good. It's, there you go. That's good stuff. I like that because it's true. There is no harm going to be done to a mm-hmm. child when they see their parents loving one another. There can be a lot of harm done when mm-hmm. they just feel tension and conflict and contempt and lack of love.
That's
and affection.
Right.
So, look, it's a good way to go, I believe. Another thing I want to talk about, because I think it's important if we're talking about things for discovery, that on that same note, is sex toys. And nowadays,
let's talk about sex toys because that makes a big difference for couples, many couples. Yes, so go ahead.
It's fun. It's discovery. It's exciting. It's all of those things. Maybe a little uncomfortable. But as I say, nowadays, there are stores. There's one right here. I live in Old Town Pasadena, California. It's a, you know, it's a pretty cosmopolitan place. It's upscale. And there is a sex store right on the main street. Glass, you could see right through it. It's not one of those sleazy places that they used to have. And, you know, it's pretty comfortable to go in. But if you don't feel comfortable doing that, online, to go shopping online, you can read reviews. It's a great place to go. And there's so many fun, beautiful, wonderful toys out there. And one of the things I like to recommend to women, you know, what was it on Sex of the City? They kept talking about the rabbit, right? It's, everything was about the rabbit. I'm not a big fan of the rabbit, but some people love the rabbit. The thing about the rabbit, and if those of you don't know what a rabbit is, it gives you vaginal stimulation. You insert this vibrator and clitoral stimulation.
Yeah, you've got the dildo and the clit stimulator going at the same time.
The problem is with it, because that's where I'm going with this, so you already know.
Yes.
There's a really lovely thing about having a dildo in you and having clitoral stimulation, because you're getting clitoral stimulation, which most women love and some even need to really get aroused, and you're getting that vaginal insertion or stimulation, but in a way that actually works. The problem with the rabbit is, one, it's not a dildo, it's actually a vibrator. So the difference between a vibrator and a dildo is a dildo doesn't vibrate. We don't need something vibrating inside our vagina. It doesn't really do a whole lot. What does do a whole lot, in my experience and with my knowledge, is the pressure of the insertion. So a glass dildo, I like the glass ones, but, you know, they're really nice, they're beautiful, and they're curved. Yeah, they feel really good. They warm up to your body. They're curved in a way so you get really great pressure on your G-spot or whatever area you need inside your vagina, that pressure that feels really good. And you don't have to worry, is it going to be the right fit? Because all of our vulvas are different. Our vaginas and our clitorises, they have different dimensions. And so to find that rabbit where it's going to measure out perfectly, it could happen, but, you know, you're sort of relying on something that's unreliable, where you have the dildo. You can use it separate. You can have oral sex and the insertion with the dildo. You can use a vibrator with when you're having intercourse or not, just like a little pocket rocket. You have much more variation, and I think it works much better, personally.
I agree with you. And I think it pays to buy a more high-end sex toy. I really love the Wii Vibe sex toys, Wii-Vibe.com. The Touch, the Nova, the Tango that has an attachment for the G-spot as well as for anal stimulation. And these Wii Vibe sex toys, can go at, I think, 6 or 7 speeds. You can plug them in and charge them up, and they'll run for 90 minutes later, and they're quiet. And I think it pays to get some sex toys that, and then they last. You know, they're not just some little cheap thing. They're quieter. They go at different speeds, and all of that. So,
and
but
they
I
laugh,
like
yeah.
the idea of a couple going together, and I've sent some of my couples to a lover's store or a Babeland or whatever. And you mentioned that in your book, that it's fun. That's a fun thing to do, is to go to a sex store together and talk. And these female salespeople are so knowledgeable. I've never found one that wasn't knowledgeable. And
yeah,
I've had some older couples go, and they're so embarrassed. One older couple was going to go on a cruise, and I said, okay, go and get some sex toys for your cruise. You know, they'd been married 40 years, and they, for the first time ever, they went to a sex, and they had a great time. They had a great time.
Aww. Yeah. Yeah. It's never too late, and you're never too old to redo your sex life, to create something different. And the reality is, we need to keep switching it up, because what worked, you know, when we were in our 20s, or even in our 30s, or even last week, may not work now. So it's important to, even if it's a wonderful thing, we can keep aspects of it, but we do need to keep switching it up. Right? We need to create that, like you were saying, that novelty, that dopamine hit, and that eroticism.
Right.
And so trying new things, taking a tantra workshop, buying a new sex toy, having those conversations and asking those questions, talking about fantasies. I mean, we've talked about a lot of really great ideas and tips here for people to try it out. I think,
you know,
it's
let's
one thing.
Just pause for a moment on fantasies, because I think that's really important. One of the suggestions that I give to my clients is to craft fantasies. And so I think it's fun to take 10 3x5 cards, and each of you writes down 5 sexual fantasies, and then the couple can even go out to a restaurant where they feel even a little more naughty, just in the public setting. So over dinner and perhaps wine, they pull out the cards and discuss, and you feel, though, discussing this in hushed voices in a public place, which is exactly the point. And your goal is make 3 piles, yes, maybe someday, and not on your life. And you put the possibilities in a shoebox, and once a month, and of course the woman, if she's premenopausal, feels the sexiest before she ovulates, you know, pull a winner. So we've got the 3 piles, yes, maybe someday, not on your life. And that gives you a start on acting out fantasies.
See, I knew I'd get good ideas from you. So I have people do something similar, but just write it on a piece of paper. But I love the, oops, I lost my earplug. I love the cards, 3x5 cards. I think that's such an important thing. Yeah, and there needs to be some ground rules, right? No judgment. It may not be your thing, but that's okay. No judgment. Like, ew, why would you want to do that? Or what's wrong with you? Like, none of that. Because it does need to be a safe place for people to talk about. And some people really have a difficult time addressing those fantasies. There's some shame or embarrassment around it, you know, and so to be able to just talk about that sometimes can take some courage. But what's really funny, and I think you probably have experienced this, I experience it all the time, is that when people do talk about the fantasies, and they could have been together for many, many, many years, usually there's something that comes up that the other person didn't know, but they've been wanting to do the same thing. Like, I didn't know that. Me too. And it's such an amazing thing that they've been together for so long. They've both been wanting the same thing, but both of them were afraid to talk about it.
And then we come to the subject of missed opportunities. Because you weren't communicating about it.
missed opportunities. And missed opportunities, they're not something to be taken lightly. Because an opportunity is exactly as it sounds. It can be an amazing thing that can really change a lot going on in your life and in your relationship. So
And yes. And, you know, what we've been talking about, Dr. Lori and Dr. Diana have been talking about this for the duration of this show. And some people ask, who wants to work on sex? You know, isn't it supposed to happen naturally? And
right.
And we know as sex therapists, Lori and I, that sex is not a natural function, but it is a natural potential. And it has to be developed, like reading or speaking a language or spirituality. You know, it has to be developed.
Yeah. And it's kind of like anybody can cook, right? Anybody can cook. They can probably throw an egg on in a pan and they can cook. But to learn how to cook delicious, fabulous meals that you want to eat every night, that's going to take some practice. That's going to take some knowledge. So it's kind of the same thing. People can have sex, but if they want it to be sustainable and they want it to be pleasurable and, you know, evolving over time, because what stagnates dies, right? It does require practice and skill and knowledge, and that's the thing that a lot of people don't know. And that's why they think there's something wrong with them when sex isn't working the way that they want. And there's nothing wrong with them. It's just an opportunity, another opportunity to figure out, okay, what's going on here? What can we do differently? And that's what we do. We help people do that.
And we help people do that. But speaking of cooking, Brian, my fiancé, and I had the privilege of eating your home-cooked meal. You made lasagna from scratch. It was fabulous.
I love it. And I get better at it every single year because I'm always practicing. I'm always learning new things.
Yes.
And I can say the same thing with my sex life. It gets better and better.
That's right.
With the intention, with the skills, with the practice, and with the knowledge. And it's not something that we're born with.
No.
We're born with sexual feelings. Those actually sometimes things get in the way that stop those even, right?
Absolutely. Dear, dear Lori, thank you so much for being on this program again. You contribute a lot, and I really appreciate it. You know, I think we want to inspire people to reconnect
absolutely
with themselves and with their partners and to suggest things that they might do to put a little extra zest in the lovemaking and ardor in the relationship. And that's what our work is about, in part.
Yes.
But that's central to it, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I love being on the show with you. I love talking to you. And I do usually, well, let me say always, actually, take something away that I carry into my practice and more information or tools to help people that I work with, and that's what it's about. And having the conversation, if you are listening to this and your partner is not, listen to it and listen to it
that's
together
right.
And talk about it. Yeah.
Exactly. And there's the music. So
thank you
again, Lori Buckley.
Thank you, Diana.
And thank you. People can listen by tomorrow. It'll be archived.
E se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro.